All right, it's me, and I want to thank everyone at the Oasis Podcast, as you were.
Hello and welcome back to the Oasis Podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. And today we are going to be doing the 2010s in review. And I'm going to be joined by my good friend and the author of the upcoming, some might say, the definitive story of Oasis, Richard Bowes. So make sure you're following him at Oasis Definitive on Twitter. And yeah, I hope you guys enjoy this episode. Once again, no news today because nothing's really going on in the world of Oasis. Liam appears to be drunk tweeting occasionally, but except for that, we're all good. So let's just crack on with this. This is me talking to Richard about everything that happened in the 2010s.
You know, you and your brother split up, and, yeah. And you guys...
We finally knocked it on the head, man, which is... it's a shame at the time, but because I felt we had records still left in us, but if we don't get on, you don't get on, and you know what I mean? And that's it, you know what I mean? But, you know, he'll go and do his thing and we'll do our thing, and I reckon it'll be an exciting time for music worldwide, you know what I mean? Let alone just England. I think Noel's record will be good and ours will be better.
Yeah.
So we'll still be at it with each other, but not in the same room.
Yeah, I think it's great because you're going to be writing, of course, and have written with Andy Bell and Gem, two guys who've been in Oasis.
Mega musicians, man. People aren't, you know, obviously Andy with Ride and stuff, people know him. Gem with Heavy Stereo, but them two are...
Yeah.
They're on fire at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I love the fact that Heavy Stereo were very influenced kind of by at that time, T-Rex and T-Rex, Bowie and, you know, that kind of Roxy music.
There's a bit of that on there, man. I'll tell you, it's a good mix.
And then, you know...
Psychedelia, but there's still some, you know, rock and roll tunes on there.
And what about the stuff now that Andy switched to playing guitar with you? Tell me about how that's going.
Mega, man. He thinks he's Jimi Hendrix at the moment.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. But no, it's good, man. It's a good mix. So the record, I'm really excited about it. We're going to record it about halfway through April. Got 3 weeks to do some tunes, see if the producer doesn't muck it up.
Yeah, have you decided who you're going to work with?
Yeah, but I'm not going to keep it stumming. I've been there. But yeah, so we go in with him.
Yeah.
See what happens, and then if it's all cool, we go back in June and finish it off, you know what I mean?
All right, it's him again. Welcome back to the Oasis Podcast with Richard Bowes. How you doing?
I'm not bad, James. Long time no speak.
No, it's not. But you know what? We've got to stop doing this because if you end up being like a co-host, I might have to give you some of the Patreon money, which I'm not willing to do. So, but you, we got the book coming. That makes you about 10p per copy or something, doesn't it? Something
yeah, like exactly. That. I'm absolutely. Yeah, from projected sales so far, I can afford bus fare to a few places. So yeah, absolutely laughing.
Fair enough. Right, so today, as we're in the new year, this is 2020, and we're going to look back at the 2010s. Now, I know that, have you seen this? Someone messaged me and was like, oh no, well, no, because the decade actually starts with one. And I'm like, oh, shut up. Like, the 1980s started with 1980, right? Mm. The Stone Roses, you know, One Love coming out in 1990, that's a 90s song. It's not an 80s song. If it's the 80s, it's got a number 8 at the start. That's how I view it. So this is
this is
10 to 19, right?
Yeah, it's a thorny one though, isn't it? Because I remember all this happened at the turn of the century, and when we went to the year 2000, it was like, "Whoa, year 2000 was like, actually the 21st century doesn't start till 2001." And I think that it's kind of a hangover from that, but yeah, I work on the same principle as you. If it's got, you know, whatever the third number in the decade is defines the decade, and then you go on to the next one after that. So we're in the 2020s now, as far as I'm concerned.
Exactly, and with Oasis, it works out really well because they split in 2009, and there wasn't much from sort of the end of the summer 09 split through to 2010. So
no.
Really, the first stuff with the brothers and with the brothers and the others.
Nice,
that's quite nice, isn't it?
No, it's good.
With the brothers and the others, it sort of starts in 2010. So
yeah.
Yeah. So, would you want to kick it off? Because I know you're a geek and you've made some notes.
Oh, throw me under the bus on the actual podcast itself. So we started, as you say, we kind of, obviously it was only a few months after the split. We started the decade with we knew that Liam, Gem, Andy, and Chris were going to carry on. Didn't know in what shape or form. I think there was still talk around about the start of the year they might even carry on as Oasis, but they were recording with well, whatever songs they had, as we later notice, a lot of some leftover songs, some new ones, and Noel had gone to ground, really. We knew he had a batch of songs. We knew, well, there was Record Machine, Stop the Clocks, Everybody Is on the Run, as it was called then. They'd all kind of been soundchecked and been sort of semi-recorded for the Dig Out Your Soul sessions. But essentially, yeah, he'd gone to ground. It was kind of assumed, everyone knew that he'd probably go solo, but he didn't do any press or anything. And then, but the first one out of the blocks for that year, for 2010, was Noel himself, when he did a couple of shows at the Albert Hall for the Teenage Cancer Trust, as he kind of semi-regularly does. He did two slots. I actually went to one of the gigs. He did actually the first one, his first solo show, as it were, where it was very much a kind of rehash of the set that he'd done in 2007 for the kind of acoustically, you know, with with I think Terry McBride, I think it was on drums. Okay. To kind of doing the acoustic songs like It's Good to Be Free, opening with that, which I kind of took to be as a statement. But actually, he'd done that previously anyway. So,
okay.
Although interestingly, he did open his solo, like when he did the album, he did open some shows with that song. So he was obviously a bit on the nose with it, obviously kind of a bit prophetic of him to kind of look at it that way. But yeah, so that was his first appearance. I remember him saying, you know, that someone in the crowd asking if he was going to play new songs. He was like, you've got absolutely no chance of me playing new songs at a charity gig. didn't get any clues, didn't get any insights to what was happening. But that was pretty much Noel's only contribution to the year. Apart from we had Time Flies, of course. Time Flies was released in the summer of that year.
That's true. So just going back to the Teenage Cancer Trust, that was actually, Gem was in it as well.
I think he may have been. I can't honestly remember, but it would make sense that he was.
Here we go. I've just grabbed it actually from a little website called liveforever.uk.com. Liveforever Media. Gem Archer, and it was the same as the semi-acoustic lineup tour. Jay Darlington on keyboards, Terry McBride providing percussion. Okay. And apparently there was rumors that Manny would get on stage, but he didn't. But the Crouch End Choir and Wired Strings were on stage with them.
Okay, good.
So, yeah.
Good.
Talk Tonight, Half the World Away, Cast No Shadow. Yeah, not bad. Oh, Slide Away, Listen Up.
Yeah.
That is a pretty decent lineup, to be fair.
It's not a bad set, is it? I particularly remember Listen Up being great. I think that probably been the first time I'd heard him do it, maybe. Or the first time I'd actually seen it live. But yeah, I remember it was a special night, albeit one that had been done before, but I think there was quite a hoo-ha made beforehand because it was his first gig since Oasis. What was going to happen? But essentially, he was just as is Noel's wont. He was actually quite predictable and just did what he'd done before.
Sure, there you go, classic Noel.
Classic Noel.
All right. So, anything else in 2010?
I'd say for Noel, I don't think so. Although there was the promotion for Time Flies, so that was when obviously the best of came out in the summer, and he did those video interviews, and obviously he did the commentary for when the DVD came out, and that became legend, of course, the DVD commentaries.
Yeah, and the guy I interviewed with Will Cooper in Manchester, Sam, he did the like a little compilation of it and put that on YouTube, and it actually went really viral for him and got thousands of views. So that was great. I love that.
That was hilarious. I remember seeing and watching them all through in a marathon sprint once, and it was really funny. But I do remember, just if you've ever watched them all the whole way through, you can tell towards the end Noel's is a bit like, well, in fact, he does say a couple of times, like, how many more of these are there? and then, like, as soon as the screen fades to black on falling down, he's like, right, I'm out of here.
He's done his duty.
Now, I was fucking drunk in this video. Look how pissed I am there. That's me really pissed. And I remember sitting down in the middle of the street. I think it might have been on Edgware Road somewhere. I'm falling asleep at a bus stop. And then going, they're the clothes I went out in the night before. I remember Liam being furious that day because I think it's the one time I've been more drunk than he has.
Do you never get involved with your ideas?
No, I fucking hate videos. I hate everything about them. I hate the fact that they cost a fortune. I hate the fact that you've got to be there at 8 in the morning. I hate the fact that you don't leave until 8 the fucking next morning. I don't like the fact that the people who are making them think they're fucking making Apocalypse Now. And everything is the most important. This is the really important shot. And this bit we're going, it's fucking bollocks. It's nonsense. And even then it was all right because there's like the chart show and all that. Do you know what I mean? Who fucking watches videos these days? No one. A right fucking con, if you ask me.
I remember thinking when Time Flies was announced, there was still that kind of semblance of doubt that he might go back with them. But then as soon as that was announced, it was like, right, that is it. That is the nail in the coffin for Oasis, because he was always against best ofs and compilations until they were done. But yeah, I remember that being, I remember thinking that was that, as it were.
Time Flies was the singles, but it didn't include Sunday Morning Call.
Sunday Morning Call was included as a hidden track. Yeah, because as the commentary reveals, like he fucking hates that song massively, and I think he was kind of loath to include it. But yeah, it's included as a hidden track on the, I don't know about the vinyl, but on the CD and on the download. Well, I think when you stream it now, you get like Falling Down / Sunday Morning Call. But yeah, it was a hidden track on the CD. I remember.
Okay, because it's like, okay, it's all the singles, oh, except that one. Yeah, it was just classic Oasis. Like they're never gonna do, they're never gonna do things, obviously and properly.
No,
but I suppose it's the first time you ever got whatever on an album. I suppose that's true. One thing. Wonderful. Yeah, and it's interesting that Time Flies. I know Louise of Stop Crying Your Heart Out has been sort of clocking the sort of end of the decade sales and things, and Time Flies is one of the best selling albums of the decade, in the UK. Mm-hmm. I think it's like 27 or something like that. It's like, that is really impressive. Mm.
You look at this, I haven't got it to hand, but you look at the track listing and it's quite top heavy for the fair weather fans, but then it kind of builds up again towards the end. You've got like Whatever and Stop Crying Your Heart Out, I think towards the end, I could be wrong. Mm-hmm. But Don't Look Back Anger's quite near the end as well, and you're like, God, yeah, I mean, it's when you break it down like that and look at all the tracks, you're like, that is still an astonishing record. Like,
yeah,
I mean, astonishing collection of songs, so it's quite justified. Mm-hmm. Really.
Yeah, I suppose we'd had Stop the Clocks mm-hmm. collection, hadn't we, which mm-hmm. was a bit of a mixture of other things as well. It wasn't just the singles, but this was basically like the greatest hits, effectively.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. And then on those, we're saying, I'm just having a look here. March 2010, Liam Gallagher was voted the greatest frontman of all time.
Okay.
By Q Magazine. And it was March 2010 that they announced the BDI single in October with an album to follow. And then November 2010, Bring the Light comes out as a download. And then the roller comes out Jan 11,
And they also had I remember they had the trailer first. They had this, it was a little kind of 38, well, that's weirdly specific, 30 second trailer, where it was just announcing that they were launching their website and stuff, and it was the middle bit of their cover of Sons of the Stage. It was just a little bit of that. And I remember, but you didn't know it was a cover, that you didn't know what it was then. I remember thinking, oh, that sounds good. As it turned out, that was the B side thing, I think.
So Bring the Light, 22nd November 2010, and then Four Letter Word, 17th of January 2011, and The Roller, 21st of February 2011, Millionaire, 2nd of May 2011, and The Beat Goes On, 11th of July 2011.
Right, okay. So yeah, I think I've got I think it's officially five singles, but as I say, it's, it's all that weird marketing nonsense that goes on now that it's not for the likes of us.
So 2010 as a year was like, pretty quiet, but you expect that, really. It was mm-hmm. sort of that downtime when they were getting their stuff together, and then obviously just sort of BDI coming together at the end of it, really.
Yeah, I mean, it was also, I mean, I think if Oasis had have carried on, it was probably slightly busier than it would have been, because, you know, Oasis had an album 2 years previously and a huge tour in 2009. That probably would have been a very fallow year were it not for you know, Liam's or the rest of the band's kind of attitude to kind of cracking on with it straight away and keep on moving, as it were.
Yeah, sure. Cool. And then, so 2011, I mean, we've said that BDI had those singles coming out, plus they played, they did some shows. They did a Japan Tsunami Disaster Relief Concert at Brixton Academy in April.
I was at that gig.
Oh, were you? How was that?
I mean, what a lineup. I think I can remember it off the top of my head. It was, I think in order, it was The Coral, Graham Coxon, Primal Scream, Kelly Jones, Paul Weller, Richard Ashcroft, and BDI.
Wow.
That's not a bad lineup, is it?
And BDI headlined it?
Yeah, well, they set it all up. So it was all Liam's thing, and then I think he got Weller involved, and that was kind of, yeah, they reached out, and I think Weller kind of reached out to people as well. So, yeah, they headlined, but it was kind of Liam's idea, I think.
Okay,
like Kelly Jones and Ashcroft did short acoustic sets, Weller and Primal Scream and BDI did full band sets, but it was just, yeah, for a charity, I mean, like, it's one of those gigs, like, you couldn't choose that lineup, do you know what I mean? It was almost too good. It was a hell of a day. BDI were probably the worst, to be honest, but...
Well, and then and apparently they did the Across the Universe cover was for that as well, which I really like. Actually, when I did my BDI top 10, I put Across the Universe in there. I think it's a really good cover.
Mm.
I really like that one.
Mm. Then, of course, before all that, there was obviously Different Gear Still Speeding as well.
Yeah, sure. What do you think, looking back on that album?
It's too long, I think. I think both BDI albums suffer from being a little bit too long. I think it's been spoken about in the past, you don't need Beatles and Stones as a track.
I think that's the weakest. I mean, other than things like, you know, like we're talking about Evil Flower from last year from Nolan, things that are more sort of experimental, that don't go, you know, that sort of like, no, that's not my thing. Mm. I think as a pure, just a straightforward rock and roll song, I think that's probably the worst thing that any of them have done for me.
So
average. You know, I could have, there's something I went to see BDI play the Swindon Oasis on this album tour.
Okay.
And just for a laugh, I was playing around with GarageBand, and I kind of put together like a little sort of a sort of a mock BDI sort of song, just as a laugh. Mm-hmm. And I think it's better than Beatles and Stones.
It's just so naff, isn't it? It's a strange mentality, because you kind of think you're starting a fresh project, you want it to be new, and yes, you have got the Oasis baggage, but don't bring out an album which, you know, everyone knows you're fans of the Beatles and Stones, but then to bring out an album where it's so shamelessly referencing it, it's just, I don't know, I think a bit of naivety from the bands there, really. And yeah, I mean, if they'd taken it out and it was, you know, the same music but to different lyrics, it might be slightly better, but that's quite weak anyway. But then you throw on the actual title and it's just a bit
rubbish. But yeah, generally I thought the album was good. I mean, at the time, you know, I got it and I listened to it and I thought it was good, but it was the disappointment of it not being Oasis.
Mm.
And for me, like, you know, I, as people know if they've listened to this, I did fall off as an Oasis fan after, you know, after Be Here Now, and then I was really excited for Standing on Shoulders, liked a lot of it, but was disappointed. And then the next two albums, I was just like, good, you know, good, and excitement when they come back, good big single to come back to, and then falls off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't go and see them live, you know, that, so that tells you everything. Mm. I was just like, yeah, fine, I still like historically my favourite band, but, you know, I'm not desperate to go out and see them. I'm not hammering the albums. I'm listening to them a few times, and then, yeah. And then when Dig Out Your Soul came out, I was like, oh, this is exciting now. Like, this is sort of really, like, the first sort of four or five songs I loved, and I was like, this is great. You know, they're coming back and they're doing something different. And then so when BDI came out, it's like, okay, and I really like Bring the Light. But then generally I was like, okay, it's a decent album, but it just felt like, you know, it wasn't as good as I was hoping. Because nothing will ever live up to that first 3 years of Oasis career. Actually, having gone back to it over the years, I now have a lot more appreciation for it. Mm. You know, and I go back to songs that I listened to a couple of times and went, oh no, and didn't really listen to it. Now I go back and think, you know what, that's good. Actually, you know, that is a good song. I mean, stuff like The Beat Goes On, at the time I just thought it was a bit like, yeah, you know, it's a bit of a, you know, they're trying to do the Oasis thing, or with Andy Bell's Hurricane Number One sort of background. It felt like a Hurricane Number One song.
Yeah.
You know? And I was like, no, not really. And I saw them live, in Swindon, at the Swindon Oasis, which is quite cool, in November 11. It's the only time I saw them. And I remember from that gig just thinking, like, they're a great band. They're a great band. And Liam was brilliant. Blistering set, but you know, the songs just weren't as good. You know, it's you can still bounce around because it's still a good band playing loud, you know, chords and guitars and stuff, but it wasn't the same as having having those Oasis songs.
I agree. I think I remember being pleasantly surprised by the album. It was better than I thought it should, better than I expected. Just by you take Niall out of the equation, and also the other band, or the guys wrote on Dig Out Your Soul. Remember, I think Dig Out Your Soul goes off a cliff after Falling Down. I think it's an album two halves, and I said I didn't have high hopes. But you know, I think Wigwam's great. I think Standing on the Edge of the Noise is a great little rocker.
Really like that one. Yeah.
I love Four Letter Word. Yeah. Morning Sun's quite good in and of itself. Kill for a Dream, that thing, tracks like that are quite bland. But yeah, I saw them four times that year. And I saw them at the Troxy on their first tour. It was very exciting. Then I saw that Tsunami gig. And then I saw them headline the tent at Reading Festival. And then they did another autumn tour. And the last two, they were tired. You know, the songs weren't good enough to sustain a year's tour, and good on them. Yeah, they were made a point of not doing any Oasis songs, and I think that as a point of principle, that was a good thing to do. Maybe a bit naive, perhaps, again, but it was a good point. But yeah, the songs didn't sustain to the end of the tour, and by the time I saw them the last time, it was at Brixton, I think, it was just like, yeah, I'm over this now. This is, you know, this is pretty stale.
Okay.
So, but you know, as a first attempt, you know, I mean, and also, as I say, they headlined the tent at Reading Festival, and that was on the basis of one album. So it was like they're only doing this because of who they are. Obviously, they're a good band, but they haven't got the songs for this yet. And I think that's when we spoke about this before. I think the doubt started to set in for Liam a little bit, and you know, they started to go a little bit downhill, and I think you could kind of see the signs towards the end of that album. But yeah, in classic Liam well, also obviously not helped by the fact that in the second half of the year Big Brother was back, and so there was that direct comparison. You know, Noel's solo album outsold their album. Noel's comeback was very popular, and I think BDI suffered from that. Obviously they would have said otherwise, but I think they kind of suffered from that quite significantly when, you know, obviously there was, I mean, over the course of the summer there was the good press that kept them going, because Noel gave his version of why the band broke up, and then then Liam sued Noel and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, I think they started the year quite high and then went down, but then obviously I say with the turn of Noel we were sated, because you know the main songwriter was back.
Yeah, and he was back with a really, really good album.
Mm.
I remember, just to take it back, I remember the press conference, and when they talked about the fact there was going to be two albums, you know, and you're like, what? It's going to be fantastic. Because there was going to be the High Flying Birds album, which ended up coming out 17th of October 11, and then there was supposed to be the Amorphous Androgynous album, which was going to be 2012, but never happened. Although it's apparently in, didn't he say it was in his sock drawer or something?
Yeah, he did say that quite recently. I believe Amorphous Androgynous have got an album coming out quite soon, and I believe their version, or an alternate version of, I think it was of Everybody's on the Run, is going to be on it.
Okay.
Now, I don't know how that's going to work. I don't know what the legalities of that, and this is something I've just read on a forum, so I don't know how true it is, but yeah, I think the things were a bit acrimonious between Amorphous and Noel. I think they ended quite badly. But yeah, Noel was talking the big talk at the press conference. Yeah, it was far out. It was going to be amazing. And yeah, in classic Noel fashion, didn't happen.
Yeah, such a shame. But yeah, so the High Flying Birds was set up. The lineup when they first started was David McDonald guitar, Russ Pritchard bass, Mikey Rowe keyboards, Jeremy Stacey drums. McDonald left during rehearsals, replaced with Tim Smith.
Okay, interesting.
And if you hear the Tim Smith, if you want to hear more about that, then the Tim Smith interview is one I did a couple of years ago now, probably. But yeah, that was really good fun. That was a really interesting one. Tim was really honest about, you know, how much of a just it didn't seem that much thought through. I mean, he was really a rhythm guitarist, and Noel was like, yeah, you'll do, go on then, play lead. And Tim was like, oh, okay, I guess I will. And yeah, and I know that you know, now people look back and go, oh, well, you know, the band was okay, but when they got Gem and Chris Sharrock in, that was really when it took off, which I feel a bit sorry for Tim, because he was, you know, when people talk about live versions of Champagne Supernova and things like that, it's like, yeah, well, when Tim Smith was in it wasn't as good, which is a shame, because he's a really good guitarist and a good musician and a lovely guy, but there is, you can't get past the fact that, you know, once you've got Gem and Noel together, they're just such a great combination of two guitarists.
Yeah, absolutely. He was, I do remember thinking I didn't see him that. When I saw him at the O2 in early 2012, and I remember thinking, it doesn't quite work so much. He seemed a bit lost without Gem, I think, is what I was thinking. I remember thinking it's a bit odd. It didn't quite seem to gel quite as well. But that could have been down to the fact that it was all new. You know, it was all about Noel, obviously all under his name. Aside from Mike Rowe, it was a new lineup. So it could have been, you know, taking its time for it, but yeah, as you say, it's all clicked into place over the last few years, isn't it, with Gem coming back to the fold.
Yeah, and that 2011 album, once again, it's a similar one to the BDI album. I thought it was better than the BDI album when it came out. And I loved Everybody's on the Run. I loved AKA What a Life. Soldier Boys and Jesus Freaks I thought was brilliant, like really kinksy. And when I look back, I think that's probably my favourite track on there.
Okay.
Because I love that storytelling, you know, and I think Noel should do more sort of storytelling songs rather than sort of vague songs. But you know, really well produced and interesting production as well. It's still, you know, it's still in the sort of rock world, and like, you know, it's not electronica, but there's horns and there's, you know, there's different tempos and different time signatures, and it's a really good album, and it is a little bit out there as compared to you know, when people look back now, having had these EPs and Who Built the Moon, people kind of talk about this and Chasing Yesterday as, oh, well, that was when it was much more straightforward Oasis, but not really, you know.
The signs were there, definitely.
Yeah, the signs were definitely there that he wanted to do something, you know, a little bit different. It's not reinventing the wheel, but it's not rehashing Oasis.
No. Well, I mean, the as you say, the kind of criticism that he gets now, you think, well, look at What a Life, you know, that was, that's, you know, with the production of that, and it's ostensibly a kind of, I don't want to say a dance track, but like a house track, and then you go on to like, and then from there you can see the Ballad of the Mighty Eye, and then it kind of goes into, so, you know, goes into the Who Built the Moon stuff. So yeah, he was pushing things a little bit anyway, but yeah, it was certainly probably the most Oasis-y album. I remember a friend asking me, he was like, what is it like? And I was like, it's just a good collection of songs. Like that's it's simply just that. It's just a very good collection of Noel Gallagher songs. I mean, I personally, like, for me, if I had a gun, I've got soft spot for that, because that's my wife, and we got my wife and I had our first dance, that song and all that sort of stuff. But I remember there's not many songs on that as well. You think, I remember a lot of people made this comparison at the time. It was like, which ones would sound good with Liam singing them? And I think probably only Everybody's on the Run, I think, and maybe Record Machine, I think, other than that.
Record Machine. I'd love to hear Record Machine with Liam. Mm. That was the big one for me, because we knew that it had been done. We'd heard the Oasis kind of bootleg version.
Yeah.
But once again, Noel was singing the bootleg version, and you just sort of, you know, just the way it's built, you can tell it's written for Liam's voice.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, yeah. Cool, good. All right, so and then the album comes out. It does really well, big seller. It then he then went off on tour from Dublin, October 2011. I suppose we go into. The other thing as well. So we had the videos as well, and this is a frustrating idea. I have done an interview with Mike Bruce, who did all the. All the videos for that album, and if you remember, they were collected together, and it was like a short film with Russell
Ride the
Brand.
Tiger, I think it was called.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's great. It's so good.
Yeah, it's
so well put together, and it's exactly the right thing you should do when you've got someone like Noel Gallagher who isn't an actor and doesn't want to be in videos. Well, what do you do then? What you do is you build a short film around him where he just has to wander in and out and just be part of the periphery, and then you can create a beautiful piece of art. It's still a video. It's still interesting. And Noel, it doesn't have to sit there and do loads of work. So that's perfect. And
and
I think looking back on those videos, when I did that interview with Mike, unfortunately, we couldn't end up putting that out. But I think they're great when you look back on those.
I absolutely agree. And you know, Russell Brown was in it as well. And I think it's only the first three, though, isn't it? Like, because there was the five singles. And I think... I remember Noel saying afterwards that he thought it was a bit much to release five singles off the album. Because also, if I remember rightly, What a Life and If I Had a Gun were swapped around. I think If I Had a Gun was supposed to be the second single, but they brought What a Life forward because something to do with the England sponsorship for the England national team.
Yeah.
The videos, Death of You and Me, What a Life and If I Had a Gun, and then Dream On, Everybody's on the One, two kind of separate things. But yeah, it's a great little thing to watch, and it's quite trippy, again, quite trippy and quite psychedelic if you would.
What I really liked about it is that especially with the Death of You and Me, with that like big band in it and things, it just works so well with the, you know, you think of Noel Gallagher as like a very Mancunian, very English, but it's got such a wide open space kind of feel to this thing, and then having it in the desert, it's great. It just gives extra dimension to it visually, and when I listen to those songs now, I do kind of have that, that's kind of like the visual I tie in with it as well. So I think it was a good idea. I think it was a good idea to do that rather than sort of, you know, him playing in front of a green screen, which is probably the least interesting thing, which he did in the last sort of couple of singles.
No comment.
That was good.
Ladies, make it a little easier for her.
Don't be flustered. It's okay. It's just a drizzle. Just a moment. Let it cross your buds. It'll just be a moment.
So Gallagher!
If we can, go on to 2012. Then kind of Noel carried on touring. Then he got the Godlike Genius for the Enemy in early 2012. Right. I was also at that ceremony when he got that. That was essentially just a mini gig. Did like seven tunes, no big deal, and did it in his usual graceless way, saying, "Yeah, you're fucking welcome." If I remember rightly, I think he's like, "Yeah, for everyone of his part, you're fucking welcome." he just kind of was pretty much everywhere in 2012. Though really, he. You know, he absolutely flogged that album to death, if I recall rightly. I saw him four times that year.
Wow.
Yeah, saw him at the O2, which was awful because it's the O2, although it's seeing Noel. And then, the Enemy Awards at Brixton, and then he did the iTunes Roundhouse free gig, and played the V Festival before the Stone Roses. And he was pretty solid, you know, pretty consistent for all of them, to be honest. I think that was freed from the shackles of Oasis. There was no kind of a lottery as to how good he'd be. It's, you know, by this point, he's quite professional, isn't he? And knows what he's doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And he is the consummate professional. He's you know, you're not going to get the that edge of your seat, you know, what's going to happen, like if you see Liam or if you see the Libertines or if you see the Pogues or something, you know, where you just don't know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You are, but you're guaranteed kind of a good show, basically, which is fine, good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't think he did anything remarkable. Flogged the album quite extensively. I remember he did a secret gig at Dingwalls where he played Angel Child. That was something to do with the Olympics. I can't remember what it was, but I wasn't lucky enough to go to that. But I think he was just kind of toured solidly, really. But I don't think there's really a lot else to say about what Noel did that year. Just kind of built on the success of his solo career.
Sure, no, fine. And then speaking of the Olympics, actually,
yeah,
probably the lowest point I'd say of any Gallagher thing, other than, you know, personal scandals and things like that, which, you know, we won't really go into. But the lowest point I'd say was BDI at the London Olympic closing ceremony 2020.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, I remember sitting down being really excited to watch it and thinking, like, BDI are playing it, okay, like, you know, because every other person that had played it, it had been a big name.
Yeah.
You know, and BDI wasn't a big name. You know, Liam Gallagher was a big name. But I was thinking, are they going to do this as Liam Gallagher? They're going to do it as BDI. But then to do Wonderwall, and Liam's voice was, I think, the worst I've ever heard his voice was at that Olympics. And it was almost embarrassing, like, you know, wow, Liam from Oasis. You know, it was not good.
No, it wasn't. There was the thing, wasn't there, that they were they wanted Noel to do it for ages, and he was kind of toying with it. And I think I remember it being an interview that he was saying, like, he had to keep it secret, or they wanted him to mime, I think, or something. And he was just like, well, if I'm doing it, I'm doing it. And then I think he got to a stage where he was like, he couldn't be bothered. But obviously they wanted some kind of Oasis representation there, being a, you know, classic British band, and then they got BDI in. As you say, we all know what happened there.
The other thing for BDI, they supported the Stone Roses
in
2012, and they started playing Oasis songs again in 2012.
Did they? Was it Morning Glory they started playing?
I can't remember off the top of my head, but yeah, I know. It just they did a few dropped in 2012.
Yeah,
I believe I could look it up, I suppose, but no, I can't be bothered. All right, so 2012, one of those sort of hangover years of just okay touring and then extra gigs and extra things, but then nothing huge, I suppose. And then 2013, we then go on to just a more of a another quiet year, really.
Well, yes and no. I mean, there was. For me, the highlight probably of the decade was Noel was again doing the Teenage Cancer Trust gigs, and he played it as the High Flying Birds. It was a good set. He mixed it up a bit, but he played like Alone on the Rope and Lord Don't Slow Me Down and Simple Game of Genius, which was good because he'd not done anything for a while. And in fact, he curated that whole week because Roger Daltrey was having an operation, I think. But the highlight was he came on with Damon Albarn and Graham Coxon to do Tender.
I remember that.
And with Weller on drums as well. Quite a super group. But to be honest, as a performance, it was all right. Noel did the harmonies for Tender and backing vocals. And I remember thinking, interesting choice of where you've gone with that. I mean, I'm not going to sing, but Noel's version, not to my ear, but it was just the statement of what it was, you know, Noel Gallagher and Damon Albarn with Graham Coxon on stage. It was, you know, for those of us that fought in the Britpop wars, it was quite a moment. It was quite an historic moment.
But it's quite interesting, actually, when you, because everyone just talks about it being, you know, Blur and Oasis. I watched, there's a quite a popular video on YouTube which was like, who won the Britpop Wars, Blur versus Oasis? It's done a load of views, and it's fine, it's okay. But one of the things that they talk about is, you know, and so Oasis and Blur all hated each other. But then in like 2017, Noel appeared on this Gorillaz song, We Got the Power. It's like, hold on a minute. Like, you've missed out all these things when they did have meetings between them. Even the interview I did with Davey Lane, he talks about going to that, the, you know, seeing Noel backstage and big hugs with Noel and Graham Coxon, that was, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. It was a UMI gig, and Graham Coxon had sort of put it on, and then Noel was there, and they've been mates again. It's not, I mean, maybe with Damon it might have been the first sort of coming back together around them, but you know, there's always been the angstiness, but I think there's, you know, you don't know what goes on behind closed doors.
No.
By the way. Yeah, but anyway.
Yeah, I remember the 2012 Brits, Blur got the outstanding contribution, and Noel was playing, and there was photographs of him and Damon then, like, you know, joshing around and stuff. So they'd obviously, yeah, as you say, it'd been going on for a while, I think.
Yeah.
But I mean, and you know, in fairness, Noel, as I say, Noel curated. He selected Damon Albarn and Graham Coxon as support for the gig. So it was obviously, you know, as you say, the things have been put to bed for quite a while, I would imagine.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
But yeah, and then I think that was it for Noel. He kind of he went underground as well in 2013. But we had the return of BDI.
Yes, yeah. Do you want to talk us through that?
Yeah. So BDI came back after after presumably spending 2012 recording with Dave Sardy. They tried to broaden the scope a little bit. I think they presumably used up all the songs they'd had when they left Oasis, and they kind of started from afresh and brought in Dave Sitek through the TV on the radio. So it was a bit, you know, a bit edgier, a bit different, released B. Now that was I remember them, they hit the promotion trail for that very, very hard. I remember, because I think they were probably a little bit burnt by the fact that Different Gear Still Speeding hadn't gone to number one, so they went all out to try and get that to number one. In fact, I remember Liam saying, I'll be devastated if this doesn't hit number one, and it didn't. I'm aware how I'm starting to sound, but I saw them at Rough Trade in the week of the album coming out, and they did an acoustic set at Rough Trade East. They did a cover of Cry Baby Cry included in it as well. But they were, I just remember them being all over the press that week, like Liam is now. You know, when he's back, he's on Absolute, he's on Virgin, he's on Radio One. I remember that BDI did the same thing then for that album, and sadly didn't quite pan out.
Of Barry Gold was in the kitchen cooking breakfast for the Queen. The Queen was in the parlor playing piano for the children of the King. Cry, baby, cry, make another sigh. She's old enough to know better. So cry, baby.
Yeah, sorry, I forgot that came out in 2013. But yeah, I said, yeah, it's a quiet year. Well, no, that was the year that BDI came back. Yeah, but so yeah, so they did. They played that Rough Trade show, and they did a, you know, what was it, HMV and the Ritz and a few other ones all throughout 2013. But then...
Gem fractured his skull, didn't he?
Gem's accident, yeah, absolutely, awful.
Yeah, I don't know, I can't remember did they have any dates lined up? I can't remember, but I remember they did three dates towards the end of the year, because again, I saw them, they did Hammersmith, but I think they only played like London, Manchester and Glasgow one night each. And I know, yeah, I think I've said this before, a lot of that was to do with Gem's injury, but they didn't, I seem to remember those are the only UK dates they did, sorry, full stop. I could be wrong, and I'm sure you'll be looking up.
Yeah, so I've got it here, so we've got, they did Newcastle, they did Manchester, these are all in November. Manchester, Wolverhampton, Portsmouth, Guildhall.
Okay, November, so a few more.
2013, London, November 2013, and then XFM, Absolute Radio, Channel 4.
Okay, so quite a few of them.
But I mean, those were TVs. And then Jan 2014, they then did Big Day Out Australia.
You're right.
They did then what was the last? I'm just on. And they did a few more in 2014, didn't they? Italy, Spain, Madrid, Portugal, Perth. Yeah, and then there was a few more in Australia. Because they all throughout January. And then I think, what was the last one? March 2014 in Japan. Japan. Paris, Feb 14. Netherlands, Brussels, Germany, all throughout Feb 14 at European Tour, yeah. So,
okay.
And then they were done.
Yeah, because did they do Tea in the Park in 2013? I think seem to remember they did that. Excuse me. But I think Gem's injury happened kind of around about the time, so I seem to remember them having some other festival dates which they had to pull out of. Right. Could be wrong. Like I say, it was the problem is by that point they'd become not that I'd abandoned them, but it was you did just start paying less attention because you kind of thought that was it as well. You thought this would be what they'd be doing indefinitely.
That's right. So it was July. Yeah, so they did a festival in Pistoia Blues in Italy in July 6th, and then they did play Tea in the Park on July 13th, Mallorca 2013, Ibiza, Benny Kassim, but then it was through to October. So yeah, no other UK festivals.
Right. That must have been when Gem did his injury then, or Gem had his injury. I mean, and for those who don't know, it was a pretty serious injury. You know, he fractured his skull, didn't he?
Yeah, definitely. And that's really worth checking out the Stage Left podcast. That's probably the best in-depth interview that anyone's done with Gem, was our friend Chris over there. And he did a really good interview with Gem.
Yeah.
He talks all about it, actually, all about how it really affected him. Like, he's lost short-term memory.
Hasn't he lost his sense of smell?
I think that sounds about right. Yeah. I think he has. It has impacted him a lot. And I didn't realise. I remember reading about it at the time, but then, you know, didn't really think anything of it. But, yeah, it has. It's been a serious injury.
Mm.
But, crazy. So that's then 2013. I suppose it then went into 2014 as well.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose while we're kind of talking about BDI, I mean, yeah, I might as well wrap up with them. Liam announced to the world in kind of tail end of 2014 that they were no more.
Yeah.
I think I seem to remember it was October, November.
25th of October 14. Liam Gallagher posted on Twitter so the band were no longer and thanked fans for the support.
Yeah, that's it. Because as we now know, Andy Bell started talking about Ride, hadn't he? And obviously, everything.
Well, they got dropped from their label.
Oh yeah, that's it.
They didn't have a record label anymore, so you know they would have had to put things out by themselves. They would have had to keep touring, and you know they were playing smaller and smaller venues, as we know. And Gem was struggling, so you know you just don't know what's happening in the background. We knew that Noel was going to be coming back with his second album,
mm-hmm.
and that was the end of BDI.
Yeah, and then Liam kind of obviously had his personal problems going on as well. I mean, that was all that came out in the summer of 2013 as well, so that's probably had a bit of an effect on things as well, without going into detail because we don't like to. So that was where things kind of kicked in for LG, and yeah, it was he had to go underground, which was I mean, in 2014 itself, it was quite a. That was when the Britpop celebration started, because it was obviously the 20 years. So we had the luxury re-releases of Definitely Maybe and Morning Glory, and the Chasing the Sun exhibition.
Yes, yeah. I never got to it. I was in this period, I was kind of out of Oasis, really. I mean, I've in sort of child world at the time,
right.
Young kids, so you know that was sort of my work and kids and stuff, and I just kind of went off music and wasn't really keyed into the generally what was going on with Oasis and stuff at that time and the Oasis guys, so I remember it happening, but I just never got down there. Did you go? I imagine you did.
I did. I remember it was in Shoreditch. It was a huge queue. I went on Good Friday, whenever it was in 2014. I remember it was very, very busy. I mean, the standout thing was, as hundreds of the listeners will no doubt have done, was the set of Definitely Maybe was there, and you can have your photographs taken posing as anyone in the band. It was a really good exhibition. Had a lot of kind of material there. Had the sign from King Tut's, and yeah, a lot of kind of merchandise and things like that. It's a long time ago now, so I can't remember it, but it was really good.
That was the set that launched a million Twitter profiles.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, it is. It's a shame now looking back. You think, oh, I wish I'd gone to that, but you know, I just wasn't in that headspace at the time. But no, it is cool, and it felt like, you know, I don't know. Throughout this period, there's been various points where you think there was a thawing, and you thought, well, maybe, you know, after, like we talked about before, it's like when you, if you're a, like I'm a boxing fan, you have these periods where you're waiting two people to fight each other, but they've got a mandatory challenger, so they can't fight. So you think, well, okay, so they've both got to fight their mandatory this period, but then maybe in the autumn. And so at this point, it's like, okay, well, BDI's gone. Noel, what's he doing about the same? Maybe an Oasis reunion at that point. So I mean, that was always in the background. And I suppose for stuff like this, for Oasis stuff, there must have been discussions, and Noel was still kind of involved and okaying things to do with Oasis.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the box sets were, the box sets, the reissues and so on and so forth. That was when, you know, when Noel makes this thing now, it's like, oh, there's always an anniversary or celebration somewhere, you know, and they start vlogging it. That's when they kind of really started in earnest. And, you know, we got an official release for Strange Thing.
Because they officially released the demo tape, didn't they? Which in reality was just, you know, okay, we've got Strange Thing now.
Yeah.
You know, which was great, which I really like that tune.
You don't get what you need. Life is a strange thing. You don't get what you need. Life is a strange thing now.
An official UK release on Morning Glory for You've Got to Hide Your Love Away, because that never got, I think that was Japan only, I think that might have been.
Oh, was it? Okay.
I think so.
I think most of us had it on bootlegs, but there you go.
Well, yeah, indeed. they were good packages, and that's, yeah, there's a lot of merchandise as well, like tote bags and key rings and all the kind of deluxe packages and stuff that you get now, whereas, that's when, I would say that's probably when brand Oasis, you know, starts to become a merchandising outlet, is what I'd say. I mean, you know, I'm jumping on that bandwagon, so I'm not gonna critique it. I've given them enough money, so you know, I don't feel bad about it. But that's when they started becoming, for want of a better word, a kind of heritage band, really.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Fair enough. Anything else from 2014?
Noel made the comeback of announced Chasing Yesterday and in Heat at the Moment at the very tail end of the year. He did that
Right.
A Facebook Q&A.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, I remember they made an announcement. He put it out on his Facebook page, like, "Dear Facebook Squares, tune in tomorrow or something for announcement." He did. He did an interview announcing what transpired to be Chasing Yesterday. It was about 6 months beforehand. Like, Chasing Yesterday was end of February, early March, and it was mid November, October that he was kind of doing it. So he quite preemptively, and that was it. It was like, why releasing it so far in advance? Like, because the way record labels function is that it has to be in certain ends of the year for it to be most profitable. Yeah. So I think he was releasing that before the end of the financial year, but prior to Glastonbury, even though he didn't play Glastonbury. Going back, actually, if I remember, I've forgotten something. BDI did a secret set at Glastonbury in 2013. Which I missed, so I can't really add to it. But just that's just a little tidbit of something else they did.
Right.
And then moving on to 2015, that was again, you know, Noel's year, really.
Yeah, good year, and and a good album. You know, once again, I don't think it's as strong as the first one, but once again, when you look back, it's just like, well, this is just a great set of tracks. You know, you can't argue with these tracks. I thought, interestingly, you know, it's stuff like, it was great to hear Lock All the Doors, you know, from, we'd heard that, as I say, once again, it's another thing we'd heard on a demo. And that was cool to have a recorded version of that. And I think that's one of the stronger moments for me. But just because it's, you know, that's my style. I prefer the out and out rock and roll.
Yeah.
I prefer that to the quieter stuff. I like Riverman and the right stuff and things. But I generally prefer the upbeat stuff. And there wasn't as much upbeat stuff on this one. But yeah, generally, once again, another solid, strong Noel Gallagher solo album.
Yeah, I've got to say, I think I prefer it to his debut.
Oh, really?
To be honest, yeah. And I'm very aware that I'm kind of alone in this, because the general consensus is that the first one was better. But I think I like Ballad of the Mighty Eye, I think it's outstanding. Lock All Doors, as you say. While the Song Remains the Same, You Know We Can't Go Back is admittedly Noel at his most kind of U2.
Yeah.
But still love it. I think it's one of his great songs. Well, one of his great solo songs for me. But then I think, actually, no, probably better. I think the highs on Chasing Yesterday are better than the debut, but then it's got a few weaker tracks. I think the debut is probably a more consistent album.
Yeah, I agree.
But like, I think you can kind of, you could, like The Girl with X-ray Eyes, River Man, to a lesser extent, The Mexican, they're all a bit like, yeah, they're all okay.
Yeah, but
as I say, I think the stronger ones are better. But you know,
and I think the stronger ones for me were the bonus tracks on there. I love Freaky Teeth.
Yeah.
I love Do the Damage.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great to have another Oasis demo that we, you know, a Standing on the Shoulder of Giants demo, mm-hmm. Revolution Song. We got to find that. Once again, it was disappointing because it wasn't. You know, I remember. You know, I've talked about it on here a few times, but having that bootleg of the Giants demos. And Revolution Song to me was like another potential master plan.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it, and mm-hmm. I thought this is going to be huge, it's going to be amazing. And when it came out, it was like he's just gone, all right, yeah, let's grab that old demo, just knock that out. It wasn't really built upon to make it amazing like it could have been. But anyways, it's a great song. I really like it.
I just remember that I remember the solo on that demo CD being great, and I remember being really disappointed that they changed the solo for the Noel solo version for the Chasing Yesterday version. But yeah, it felt like he was kind of cleaning out the closet a little bit, like for those two albums as well, like getting rid of some of the, like you say, Lock All the Doors and all the stuff on the first album. But yeah, I agree. Like, yeah, Do the Damage is fantastic. Another little curio: he played Freaky Teeth on his first tour quite extensively, but they didn't actually get a release until the following album. So the only version you had were like live versions of it. Again, I think he felt freed up to do that, be able to do that sort of thing. But yeah, I agree. Yeah, Freaky Teeth, yeah, the bonus tracks are brilliant.
Well, I suppose they didn't really fit in with the overall feel of the album.
True.
But yeah, I think they're great. And I suppose that then kind of showed the way forward, where we would be going with the Who Built the Moon, with tracks like Fort Knox and mm-hmm. Holy Mountain have a bit more of a dancey feel to them.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is where the remixes started. Like, he released a remix EP towards the end of the year, Where the City Meets the Sky, and with remix versions. I think those were where he started to really kind of get back into, like, his early 90s sort of sound. And, yeah, and as I say, the remixes really began in earnest then as well. Liberated, in fact. Sorry, go on.
And you had El Mexicano as well, didn't you?
Yes, yeah, in 2016. Yeah, which I listened to the other day. It's surprisingly good, actually. I can generally take or leave the remixes, but I really like that one.
Yeah, it's a little bit more to it. I think it's a bit different, but wonderful. All right, so we're a bit mixed up and around now. But
yeah,
where
sorry.
Are we? That's all right.
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of in my notes. I think 2015 again. Noel just toured a lot, really. Released another five singles off the album. Obviously, Liam was missing in action. So yeah, it was just about Noel again continuing to consolidate his success. Speaking personally, I saw him in Glasgow at the Hydro. I vividly remember him making that comment that the guy from King Tut's you had on here recently saying about that our kid must be doing a roaring trade in Glasgow at the moment because everyone's wearing pretty green. I remember him saying that. I actually met him that day as well because I shook his hands. He did a signing at HMV. I just remember being gutted because I know he's left-handed, obviously.
Yeah.
So I reached out with my left hand to shake his hand and he just refused. He just held out his right. He was just like, he just wasn't playing. He was just like, did that proper like Noel Gallagher look where he was just like, no, you'll shake this hand or nothing. Mortified.
Did you speak to him at all or just...
No, it was just him just rattling through, just signing the CDs and that was it. You know, some people do photographs and stuff, but he looked like he really didn't want to be there. So I thought, I tried to show myself as, being a proper fan by saying, I'll try and shake his left hand, but he gave me very short shrift and I moved along. And that was that.
Magic moments.
I know, my claim to fame. That was when he stopped doing the blog around that time as well, I remember, and he started doing Instagram. I remember I saw him at Clapham Calling, but it's as bad as it sounds, nothing really stands out about that year. It's just a kind of, as I say, kind of consolidating, really.
Yeah, it's more gigs from the Chasing Yesterday era, and it's all good.
Yeah.
And then are we on to 2016 now?
Yeah. I mean, but on that, Noel was still touring Chasing Yesterday. I saw him in Glasgow in August 2016 with Richard Ashcroft supporting. But Noel was kind of doing his thing. But there was a lot of other things going on in 2016. We had re-release of Be Here Now. With the finally getting the Mustique demos.
Yes, that was great, and some of the acoustic songs as well, like If We Shadows and things like that. That was amazing to have, like, new music, new stuff.
Yeah.
And a lot of us, I think the Mustique demos had leaked before, it was great to have those out there, definitely.
Every time I look away, there are all the things I might never say. Everything I do is wrong, but it always sing my song. Yeah, I always sing my song my own way. Cause if we shadows are all the things we say we are.
Well, then, and we all, in other news, we had Liam kind of sort of announced his return. I think that was his official I'm a cunt tweet after he signed his deal. And obviously Supersonic as well.
Yes, which is great. So you imagine that in because that came out in October 2016, I think. So throughout that period they would have been going in and doing those interviews. And as I say, I spoke to Matt Whitecross kind of about that sort of situation of them, you know, having to kind of book them in at times to avoid each other and stuff like that. Mm. And that was great. It was wonderful to get that 2016, to get Supersonic out. Really, what a brilliant film. I know it still feels quite fresh, but, that's 3.5 years ago now. It's crazy, really. But that's one of the highlights of the decade, really, was just having that film out. And, my only issue with it was, as we talked about, it bloody ended in Nebworth. We needed part two.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's you've said this before, haven't you? That's kind of what prompted you to start doing the podcast, wasn't it?
You're absolutely right. That was the spur to think, let's tell the rest of it. It was great. It was a really, really enjoyable thing. And as you said, it was like, okay, well, is Liam going to come back then? And so we had those interviews with Liam, and he's got the really long hair at the premiere and stuff. And he's sort of then talking about, okay, it was happening. It was happening, but we just didn't quite know when.
Yeah, doesn't quite know what it was going to be. But that's kind of, I don't know, do we need to kind of cover the last 3 years? Because obviously we know you know, they've been documented in to death in terms of well, not documented to death, but obviously you've had the podcast, so it's been gone to a lot of it.
Absolutely. So I think, I mean, just to clarify, I mean, you've had, you know, to skim through it, you've had, it was interesting that we kind of had them go head to head in 2017, you know, as you were, fantastic, you know, Who Built the Moon. I know it's got some detractors, but you know, it was great to have them both head to head together, and they have kind of mirrored each other really. And in 2018 they've both been you know, both just carrying on touring and stuff, and then, and in 2019, if Noel had released an album in 2019, then it would have been head to head again, but obviously it's gone slightly differently, still releasing new music but just not under that album banner title. But yeah, what an incredible decade, really. I know it's sort
mad,
of had peaks and troughs and sort of, you know, busy periods and quiet periods. But, you know, I think when you look back at it and go, right, well, you know, 2 BDI albums, 2 Liam Gallagher albums, 3 High Flying Birds albums, plus other singles and EPs. Mm-hmm. You know, if you think back to the 2000s, it's probably better than the Oasis 2000, you know, 2000 to 2009, I'd say.
And it goes back to this whole thing, isn't it? It's not like, you know, who wants Oasis to return? And I kind of look at it and think, I mean, aside from, you know, the reasons why they won't and all that sort of stuff, I think from a fan's perspective, it's like, well, hang on, we've never had it so good, really. You know, we've got 7, as I say, 7 Gallagher Nate albums, the EPs, 2 Ride albums, you know, the reissues, you know, new tracks, the reissues, countless opportunities to see either of them. I think as a fan, it's, yeah, as I say, it's kind of never kind of had it so good, really. The sadness, absolutely, obviously, they won't be Liam and Noel, you know, it's unlikely to see Oasis, but then you've got everything else that you could possibly want as a lunatic like we are.
And just to, you know, just to not ignore the others, Boned did Phony and the Freaks throughout this period, a few EPs with them, which was good. He did the Parlour Flames with Vinnie Peculiar, which was good. And then obviously, like, touring with Liam, so it's nice that Boned's been still out there and doing bits and pieces. He played with Pete McLeod as well, so yeah. And he's done a few interviews and things. There was that 5 Live interview, wasn't there, about like When I Was There or something.
Oh yes,
with Adrian,
yeah,
Childs. That was good. That was the that was about Definitely Maybe, wasn't it? Because they had the real people. They had Chris on there as well.
That's right,
The real people.
This cover we're looking at is from the 14th of August 1999. As you can see from the headline, Oasis exclusive, Bye Bye Bonehead. No, we let him go. Did you? Makes a difference. But anyway, yeah. So that's relating to the fact that I'd just put out a statement saying that I'd left the band after all the years that I'd been in them, and that was the end of me with Oasis. To be truthful, I think the fun had gone. And the fun had gone for me, and I could see at that stage when I left. You know, I've said it before in interviews. We rented a mansion in the south of France. It used to belong to Christian Dior, and it was a huge, gorgeous old rambling place with tennis courts, swimming pools, chapel in the ground. We brought our own studio out, rigged it up in the garage, made our own studio. It should have been perfect, you know. We should have had 6 weeks of joy, you know. It should have been the most pleasant album to record ever. And it wasn't, you know. Everyone had their own maybe personal problems, or we'd sort of scaled great heights in a rapid amount of time. We didn't have a break, and I think that showed in the recording. I could feel it. And that's what really did it for me. I just thought, this isn't fun, no one's smiling, no one's having a laugh. And you can't forget why you got into this and why you joined the band and why you picked up a guitar in the first place, is to experience that fun and that enjoyment and that love of what you do. And it wasn't there. So I just thought, well, I could carry on and not speak to anyone and not tell anyone, finish the album and go and tour it. No one had been on the wise, and I'm still Boned and Oasis, but I'd be lying to me. But I think more importantly, I'd have been lying to those guys. And you can't do that. You can't be in that band and lie to the other members. You can't go along with it and pretend you're enjoying what you do. You can't pretend. You've got to love it more than, if there's such a thing as more than 100%, you've got to love that band more than 100% to succeed in it. That's how we got where we got, you know. And I wouldn't have been giving it all. So I made the decision, which wasn't easy, as you can imagine, to leave. So I did, spoke it through and put a statement out.
So he's done bits and pieces, you know, and he's a great talking head to be brought out for Supersonic and, you know, and the As It Was documentary and things. He's such a good talker, he's both good. And, you know, and based on what, you know, the various people that I know that know him have said, he's an absolutely great guy. So I just, I would love to have him on the podcast, but, you know, there you go.
We live in hope.
Anyone else do anything? We've mentioned Andy Bell, Ryder, the great comeback in the last sort of 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
Tony's had this brilliant period being out on the road in the last year, which was fantastic, which we can touch upon when we talk about our 2019 review. And anyone else done anything?
Obviously McGee's, you know, McGee had his book. Was his book out this decade? I can't remember. I think it was Creation Stories. And then obviously he's now very much back in the ascendance with
Comeback into management. And
he manages Happy Mondays and Cast, I think. He's got obviously got Creation 23. He's got the Q&As. He's a very busy man at the moment. Obviously, he's got the film out next year. Who else is there? Who else kind of associated? We've got...
Well, you've got Owen Morris is sort of... he's kind of gone quiet. He's actually moving to Costa Rica.
Yes, I heard apparently. That.
Yeah. So that's what he's up to. And anyone else? Well, everyone.
Alan and Griggs, but...
Yeah, Alan's quiet. Just to let you guys know, I did... Because it's going to be the Morning Glory reunion. It's the Morning Glory 25th anniversary this year, and so the only thing I've got booked in so far is a Q&A with McGee in Monmouth, I think, in October. So we don't know yet what other 25th anniversary stuff there'll be for Morning Glory. I did message Steve White the other day and said, I know what the answer is probably going to be, Steve, but we're looking to book our sort of 20th anniversary tie-in shows. If any chance do you think Alan might want to do something, you know, I'll, you know, whatever he wants to do, just an interview, you know, a live performance, I'll happily give the money to charity. You know, if we make, you know, I would happily, you know, pay him and pay money to have that, you know, just to have it happen. You know, I don't, we just need him, you know, I would just love him to be back out there. And Steve, he said, I put it to him. I tried. He doesn't want to do it, which I completely understand. But, you know, as a person, it's exactly the same with Gwiggs and with Chris Hutton from The Rain, you know, who I have spoken to at Shine On a year or so ago. You know, for them personally, as individuals, they're like, no, I've moved on. That's not my life now. And I get that as an individual. But the frustrating thing is I don't think of, you know, I think of it more as the history of music. And I think more as, imagine if we never got an interview from Keith Moon or from Ringo or from, you know, Mike Joyce or, you know, all these really important players and these important people in the history of these bands. And if we never get an Alan White interview, and the older he gets, the more he'll forget. So I just think, you know, I'd love it if we could just get, I don't care if I don't do it. I just would love someone to, you know, to get Alan, whether he does a book or whether he series of interviews, however he does it, you know, there's so many stories that we need, you know, we need to hear, and we're just not gonna get it by the sounds of it, which I just think it's a shame for the history of music.
Absolutely. I mean, especially for him, because you think it must be fascinating for him to come in when he did. You know, I mean, we've heard all this, you know, all the way up Tony's perspective on it, but then he came in. They were number one. You know, they were red hot. You know, and the, you know, the situation, the environment in which he came into, of, you know, his first, what was it? His first thing was Top of the Pops. Then he did the warm up show, and then it was Glastonbury. You know, and then to sort of literally be thrown into the madness. I think it'd be really good to hear. And I mean, he was there for, you know, obviously the longest period in terms of drummers, but probably the most, the biggest part of the story, essentially. You know, it came into the madness, and then, you know, the even more madness to be here now than the kind of, you know, the rocky years of 2000 when, you know, Bonehead and Gwiggs left, and in 99, and then, you know, going back to Consolidate for Heathen Chemistry. You think, as you say, he's probably got a lot of good stuff to tell. It's, yeah, it is a real shame, actually.
But there you go. I completely understand it, because it's life. And if you, you know, if you move on from your job and you have other things that happen in your life, but, you know, it's like Chris Hutton, you know, I said, oh, Chris, but we need, you know, and haven't you got stuff? Haven't you got old programs of The Rain and set lists of The Rain? You know, that sort of thing. It'd be, and I'm sure that Brian Garcia and the other collectors out there have been onto him about this stuff. He's like, nah, mate, I'm not into it. That's not me. Because mm-hmm. I'm happy with my life. I go to gigs. I go and watch Man United play around the world. I've got my job, got my family. I just want to move on from that. You think,
yeah,
well, yeah, I get it. It's just,
it's your prerogative,
you know,
but
for the music historians, it's frustrating. But there,
yeah,
you go.
There you go.
Wonderful. So that was the 2010s.
Done.
2010's done. And what's that? Is that going to be book number two, Richard?
Oh, do you know, I was just thinking about that, actually. I probably shot myself in the foot here because, you know, essentially I have this this interview has just literally just picked up where the book finishes. So, so I'm like...
So this is, some might say, part two.
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, no, I've obviously got, you know, a lot. I could have gone into a lot more detail about it, but, yeah, people, there's only so much. Even the podcast fan's not going to be that impressed with what else, you know, Everybody's on the Run got to number 175, you know, that type of thing. But, I don't think you did. I literally made that up.
All right, fair enough.
But, yeah, but yeah, as you say, what a decade.
Yeah, great decade. And it was good. As I say, I dropped off it sort of in the middle, but then, having come back in April 17, just thrown myself into it. It's been great. It's been such fun to chronicle this last sort of couple of years and to make acquaintance of some really cool people and you, Richard.
Hey, thanks very much. Yeah, but I mean, I think, yeah, you've certainly given the Oasis community something else to get their teeth into and options to speak to each other. And, you know, I think long may the podcast continue and obviously everything it's done for me personally, but indeed for the community as a whole. And yeah, roll on the next decade.
Gorgeous end to a wonderful decade of great stuff from both the Gallaghers. And I put it out there on Twitter this evening to say, what do people think? What was the best for recordings, 00s or 2010s? So we're not talking about live and all that sort of stuff, but just purely in terms of recordings. And we break it down. The 2000s had Standing on the Shoulder of Giants, Heathen Chemistry, Don't Believe the Truth, and Dig Out Your Soul. And the 2010s had Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds, Different Gear Still Speeding, BE, Chasing Yesterday, As You Were, Who Built the Moon, Why Me, Why Not. Plus, we had two Ride albums, Phonies and the Freaks and Pile of Flames. And at the moment, the 00s are winning it, 53% to 47%, which is interesting because I was kind of thinking the 2010s would be more likely to win. And just give you a few comments. Elliot Marsh said, not even close for me, James. I have 2017 as the best Oasis year since 1997. Angus Walsh, difficult choices. However, since I started developing an interest in the 2010s, I would say the 10s had a much better sound, all great. Britpop Memories said, I'll say the 10s because Liam's solo stuff and the BDI albums are cool. And Wheel of Doom said, such a tough one. I'd say it's pretty even. Noel's first and Liam's two solo albums stand up to anything they did with Oasis in the 90s. And also, a little while back, I asked for your guys' highlights of the 2010s for that decade. And we've had the following. Mob Man of Max said, Black Star Dancing for its willingness to not sound like a retread of everything they'd come before and the rage it engendered in so many people. Grandpa Batman said, first, this podcast as a forum to discuss and rediscover the magic of their music. Great to hear stories and details from those close or in the band. Thanks, Tony McCarrolls. And second, meeting Noel Gallagher, Gem, Jess Greenfield, Mike Rowe at various gigs across the US. And third, great albums by both Noel and Liam. Richard himself said Noel's gigs at the Hydra in 2015, the Albert Hall in 2010, the two Ride albums, the excitement of Wall of Glass and the majesty of If I Had a Gun. We Are DNA said pedant moment, the decade ends after next year. Yeah, so it was We Are DNA who I was talking about at the start of the episode there. That's just annoying. Come on, the 90s started 90, they don't start at 91. Michael Hart said, getting to interview four of the six final members of the band, the B-sides from Noel's first album, Noel's 2012 Sydney gig, Ride reuniting and the release of Gem's demos. Yeah, the Gem demo release, we should have covered that really, that was great. Ryan Doherty said, for what it's worth and once, the amazing emotion that Oasis were capable of, it felt like a break from the bickering and tabloid gossip. Philly Mess says, first Noel album, something really special. Also the interview Noel did with Nicky Wire and John Kennedy, which I can't track down now, where Noel says, once we got rid of Top of the Pops and Concord, we were fucked. Benjamin Nibb, Noel Gallagher, Teenage Cancer Trust, the first gig he did post Oasis, amazing. Rocking Chair, Don't Go Away, Cast in Shadow, every single person in that place was singing, it was glorious. Britpop Memories said at BDI at Wolves Civic Hall on their first tour, the buzz around the room was huge. Then the band came on, it was like a war zone. The best Oasis related gig experience, gig atmosphere I've ever experienced. And Martin Key said, I got a ticket last minute for that gig, it was great. Edward Loftus says, Liam's entire output since 2017. Brits and Pieces said, Noel Teenage Cancer Trust, Noel Brixton, Noel Roundhouse, Liam Finsbury, Liam the Benefit stuff, Liam the Unplugged stuff, Bonehead the appearances with Liam, plus the great stuff that Microdot and Michael Spencer Jones have been sharing recently. It all helps bring some great memories together. And Stephen Pierce said, Roundhouse on that little first run of Noel's gigs. Noel and band were good, but the crowd were awful that night. Static as fuck. Kaz, who is at CM Special K, said, Liam singing My Sweet Lord at the night for John Brooks was just utterly sublime. Possibly one of the most moving performances I've ever seen. He made it perfect. Rye Kitchen said, gigs for sure are Liam Unplugged and Noel Manchester Apollo. Tunes in the water. BDI flickered a finger. High Flying Birds, If I Had a Gun, She Taught Me How to Fly, Right Stuff. And Liam, Once, Wall of Glass, Why Me, Why Not, and For What It's Worth. Richard Gale says, Noel at the Roundhouse, mainly because I never thought I'd see him somewhere that small, but also because it was good to see Noel taking off, as it were. Also, having been initially dubious about much of their stuff, I really enjoyed BDI at the Japan Tsunami benefit. George Williams said, fucked if I know what you're on about. And Stephen Pierce said, Noel, Royal Albert Hall, Teenage Cancer Trust, BDI Manchester Apollo, Liam Finsbury Park, Noel Liverpool Echo, BDI Wolves Civic Hall, and Noel Manchester Arena Chasing Yesterday Tour. So, yeah, loads of great memories over the last 10 years. And as I say, it's been an absolute pleasure for the last kind of 2.5 of them to be chronicling it. And yeah, let's hope the 2010s are going to bring more amazing stuff for us. Anyway, there's no time for looking back. Let's thank you for all your support. Thank you for listening to the Oasis podcast. A special thanks to our patrons. You put your money where your mouth is and it makes a massive difference. You can become a patron and support the show at patreon.com/oasispod. And I've just done an update post over there actually for the patrons. Basically, the two things that I'd kind of been promising patrons and I haven't really delivered was I talked about doing songs for people. No one was really that bothered about it, but actually if people do want songs, then I will happily put together songs. And also merch. I said if you support at $5 or above, I'd send a exclusive piece of merch from my own personal collection. I was doing that for a while and then I ran out. So I've actually just agreed to buy a bunch of rare bootleg CDs. So yeah, I will be sending out in order of like the people that have supported the longest, all my $5 patrons will be getting a rare bootleg CD in the next coming couple of months. Do follow me on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook at Oasis Podcast. You can email me oasispod@gmail.com and please subscribe on iTunes and also on YouTube. Oh, and remember, you can pre-order the book. Obviously, you've heard from Richard today. He knows what he's talking about when it comes to the solo years, and he knows even more what he's talking about when it comes to the Oasis years as well. So make sure you're ordering the book. Some might say the definitive story of Oasis. All right, that will do it for today. Many thanks for your time, and stay in touch, stay engaged, and stay young.